Welcome to Pigskins and Pageantry, a podcast dedicated to all things SEC football. My name is Wes, and I'd like to invite you to join me, Jesse, and Matt each week as we discuss last week's games, news from around the league, make predictions for the upcoming games, and much, much more. And what's up, everyone? Week two is in the books, and some of us are happier than others, but not all is lost. Matt earlier was like, I'm not actually thirsty. I just wanted everyone to see my mug. We'll get into it, but Jesse, how are you? How are you coping? How are things?
I don't know why you would ask me that. As an Alabama fan who's also a Patriots fan, my week has been really great. So I don't know why you would even need to ask that. I mean, everything's fine.
Your background has me a little worried, though.
So. Everything's fine, Wes.
Matt, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm trying to figure out what best adjective to use to describe Jesse right now. Delusional is a good word, I think. Maybe some a lot of things going on there. She's wearing all black, so thanks to be her. As you can see, I'm down in the bayou, down in the swamp, because the Vols are getting ready to take on the Gators. So I thought I saw Ed O down here somewhere, but he seems to have wandered off somehow.
Yeah, he was trying to have a press conference and you disturbed him. All right. Well, as we alluded to earlier, some interesting things happened over the weekend. Let's talk about some of those games from last weekend.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
That's not even true. Sometimes you could be second or third or tenth.
That's right.
It's fine.
When I told you that, I was high.
Hey, if I'm drinking, you got to warn a guy, okay? Don't be making jokes like that when I'm mid-sip.
All right, well, let's start with the first one, Ball State at Georgia. Georgia winning this one 45-3. Jesse gets the point here. Slow start for the Dogs, but an explosion of points kind of started close to the end of the first quarter. So I don't have anything to say about that. And honestly, a lot of these we can just sort of skip unless you guys want to pop in and give your 2 cents real quick. Matt, did you want to say anything? I see you have something written there, but.
Yawn. I mean, just yawn. Wake me up when Georgia starts out fast. That'll be a nice change of pace. Bulldogs are going to do what UGA does and what they've been doing for the last couple seasons. They're going to come out and they're going to take care of business. That's exactly what they did here. Not a lot to talk about other than, you know, Carson Beck actually looking like a decent quarterback, 250 plus yards. He only threw 70 completions. He did throw a pick, but not a bad day for him.
Yeah. I just real quick before we move on, the only thing that I'm really worried about is the O-line. And granted, you know, we haven't really seen them, you know, in a super stressful game situation. But so far what I've seen is that we're not moving people around like I would like. We pass block pretty well, but making the holes for the run game, not really doing it yet. So we'll see what happens.
Your top running back got 38 yards. That's
that's
a bit cringe.
Little disappointed.
Couldn't be Tennessee. Couldn't be Tennessee, no.
I mean, and the defense put them in great position, you know, a lot of times. So that really helped us out. So anyway, next one, Vanderbilt. At Wake Forest. Wake winning this one 36-20. You guys had the same differential. I had to do math there to see who was closer. Matt gets the point here. And I thought Vandy might have a shot in this one, but, you know, Wake didn't really give him a chance, didn't let him stick around in the end. Matt, did you have anything to say about this one?
I mean, I didn't have a chance to watch this, but if you go back and look at the stat line, I mean, Vanderbilt had 3 turnovers, and anytime you're turning the ball over more than once, you're going to give up points, and that's exactly what ended up happening. You lose that time possession battle as well. It's not a good way to win a football game. However, the one bright spot that you can look at in this stark raving hole that is Vanderbilt football would be Lennon Humphreys. I mean, he showed up. He had 4 catches, but each of those was over 25 yards. He had 109 yards total with a touchdown. So it's a bright spot for Vanderbilt, something to build on. It'll be a real shame when the transfer portal gobbles him up at the end of the season.
Jesse, do you have anything to add?
I mean, yeah, my 2 notes were just that mistakes on their end are not going to help them. They need all the help they can get. So when they're playing against themselves and the other team, it's not going to be a good situation. 2 fumbles, one of which was on a punt return that resulted in a touchdown for Wake Forest. Not a great look. The other thing is their rushing defense is going to be an issue. Wake Forest, the Demon Deacons?
Yeah.
They dominated the line of scrimmage and finished the day with 48 carries for 288 yards. So that's not great. Vanderbilt had done okay when it came to rush defense in the first two games, allowing just 40 and 135 yards. But Wake Forest is a different level of opponent and not even the hardest opponent that they'll face. So good luck, Vandy Belt.
That's our new name for them. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. Eastern Kentucky at Kentucky. Kentucky winning this one 28-17. Guys, I was a little bit worried here. Kentucky flirting with disaster against an FCS school, but they do manage to get the win. Like, gosh, I was legit worried that they were going to lose to an FCS school. Jesse, what were your thoughts?
I mean, I think I was also worried, but I think people forgot that even though they beat Ball State before and, you know, a 30-point win, they trailed in the first quarter of that one as well. So slow starts seem to be something that they're doing this season that we can't.
Not just them.
It's not a good look. You cannot start slow because when you get into SEC play, that's not going to work. And heck, even now it looks like once you get into, you know, Big 12 play, something's, you can't do that. The other thing is they've got to clean up penalties and third down defense. They were not doing well on that. Penalties, third down defense was very costly for them. So I think they have committed 17 penalties for 121 yards through two games. You can't do that. That's awful. And their opponents have only committed a combined 8 penalties for 63 yards. So that's a huge gap, and they got to tighten things up if they're going to go into SEC play.
Matt?
There's not a lot to talk about here. By the way, Wes, I absolutely love the Molly Hatchet reference with flirting with disaster. Well done.
It's a good one.
An SEC school, I feel like shouldn't, and I know I can't say a whole lot because Tennessee had its own struggles with Austin Peay, which we'll get to in a second. Like a directional school, we should not be worried about beating a directional school late in the second half. Kentucky, who we thought was going to be improved this season's come out and they have not really showed us a lot. I'm not sure what that says about the state of the program. Maybe it's just a slow start. We've seen teams come out slow and then start to get better as the season goes along, but it's not been pretty thus far with Kentucky, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens going forward, and how they're going to progress from this. By the way, and y'all can't see this because you're either watching it on YouTube or you're listening to it on the podcast, but if you zoom in on our notes and look at the cat that plays quarterback for Eastern Kentucky, yikes.
No.
He looks really happy to be there.
He looks like Buddy himself, right? When he
does look like the, that's what I saw. I was looking down at the notes, and I'm like, that's Buddy the Elf.
That is awesome.
Weird.
In fairness, it seems like Kentucky, at least for the past few years, has been almost like a patchwork offense. They're not like recruiting on a super high level. I mean, not terrible, but not super high. So it's like the transfer portal is their friend when it comes to quarterback, running back, et cetera. A lot of these key position players. And I feel like Stoops is just doing what he can to just sort of keep them in it. So to his credit, he's getting them, but maybe not. Maybe it takes a little while for those people to gel, being brought together like that. Next is Ole Miss at Tulane. Ole Miss wins this one 37-20. Jesse got the point here. And it might have been even closer or maybe even the other way if Tulane star quarterback Michael Pratt could have been able to play, but he was not able to due to an injured left knee. Kai Horton got the start. Lane was asked about Tulane's defense. He said they were showing a bunch of different looks and confusing them. Tulane actually led this game for much of it until Ole Miss took the lead again in the fourth quarter and eventually got a bit of a cushion. So, Matt, let's start with you this time. What were your thoughts on Tulane? I know we kind of circled this one last week thinking it was going to be kind of a diamond in the rough, exciting game, but what were your thoughts?
I mean, I'm glad that, you know, a charter school of the SEC that would be Tulane was able to come in and, you know, make a showing of it, but I just don't understand what in the world's going on with the SEC this year. It seems like any time we're playing anybody at a conference, we're not looking very good. Look at the performances last week. Look at the performances this week with Texas A&M and the other school that's on the other side of the border from Georgia. In Auburn struggled with Cal. So it's just one of those things where nobody's having a great out-of-conference season thus far, and it makes me a little concernicus about what we're going to look at when we get to bowl season, because remember, bowl season's all about matchups with other conferences. And, you know, kudos to Tulane, but, man, Ole Miss had to scramble to get as many points back as they could in the fourth quarter. Eventually they get there, but if you're trying to pump up 20 points in the fourth quarter, you're not going to win that fight every time you take it. So Lane's got some work to do down there in down in the Grove, because I don't know where to even start with that one. I mean, look at what Jenkins did. He didn't do a whole lot, not a grand amount anyway. He came out real slow, and he never really got. I mean, he had 48 yards. Is that what the stat line says? 48 yards for what's apparently supposed to be the best quarterback in the country. It's a bit iffy.
Running back, yeah. Jesse, what was your thoughts to seeing this?
Yeah, I agree. I was really excited this season to watch Judkins run. I thought he was going to be a really big deal, but apparently everybody's defense has also recognized that he might be a big deal. So it's just shutting him down, and kudos to them for being able to do that and for making Lane Kiffin have to call a really, you know, different kind of offensive game. He's got to be creative, which he's very good at, but this game to me came down to Jackson Dart being able to get his offense back on track. I mean, after the first half, it was very iffy. They were trailing by 10 partially through the first half. And then he came back and he was 17 for 27 in that, you know, in that second half. Through the air, he was 267 yards. And I think there was two plays in particular where he really solidified his role as a leader, as a quarterback on the team for Ole Miss. And the first of them was, you know, that long run that set up the field goal opportunity to give them a late lead. And then the second was that fourth down kind of magic trick where he found his tight end to score. And that really is what sealed the game for them. So without Jackson Dart being able to manage the game and being able to make the reads that he did, I don't know that Ole Miss wins this football game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So good on them for getting it figured out. And we'll see what they do against other opponents. Although this week is not exactly a huge test for them. So we might have to wait on that one. So next, Texas A&M at Miami. By the way, shame on Miami for not packing that place out. Did y'all see the empty seats? It was so many empty seats in that place. And I'm like, this is an NFL stadium. You should be able to pack that place out.
Too. Like, it was the bottom section and there was nobody at that ball game. It's like,
yeah.
What are you even doing, Miami?
I was shocked. Anyway, Miami wins this one 48-33. I got the point in this one. Wigman looked good for A&M. And honestly, A&M's offense looked better as a whole if we're comparing it to last year's anemic performances. But turnovers still killing them. Also, Miami looked good. I mean, Tyler Van Dyke in this offense is going to be a problem for some teams, I think, this year. So I think it was a mixture of both for me. Texas A&M had a little bit of a struggle there, but then Miami, they just played well. So I don't know. What do you think, Jesse?
I think there's a couple things for A&M. The first is I just wonder how hot that seat is getting for dear little Jimbo down there in College Station, but maybe not hot at all. The first concern for me is the tackling performance or lack thereof displayed by the Aggies. And Jimbo Fisher even mentioned it. I mean, he said that they had a terrible performance tackling and that was why Miami was able to generate so many of those explosive plays. And they were just able to like shed the tackles, just bounce them off. He can't have that. I think there was also not a lot of pressure up front. They limited Miami to about 77 yards on the ground, but they were not able to generate sufficient pressure on the quarterback. And he felt pretty untouched, felt like he was pretty safe back there. So I think that was another component that added to Miami's success. But if you're an Aggie and you need some some point of brightness, maybe a little silver lining for you. I think Connor Wegman and Evan Stewart are starting to generate a decent connection there. You know, he caught 11 passes for 142 yards. So that's something maybe for them.
Matt.
I play defense, but you know.
I don't know what in the world was happening with Texas A&M's secondary, because they were getting, they, like Jesse was talking about, they couldn't bring the ball carry down at all. They could not shut anything down. There were several plays where it just looked like they were trying to deliver a hit rather than tackle and bring the guy to the ground, which is a big defensive fundamental no-no. You're not supposed to do that. You go for the tackle. Forget trying to hurt the guy.
We're seeing that a lot.
Trying to bring him down. Yeah, I think everybody's looking for the highlight reel. Everybody's looking for that. We saw it during did we see it? I think we saw it during the Bama game too.
Absolutely, you did.
Yeah, there were a couple there. So the thing is first off, I want to go on record as saying I'm glad that Miami is not back, because I'm not going to be that guy like the Texas folks are trying not to be. Like, I'm not going to say Miami's back, but it does make me feel a little bit better to see Miami being decent. I think you're right, Wes. I think that Van Dyke's going to be trouble. That offense that they've got, if they can start clicking along like that in ACC play, I think they've got a good chance of winning the conference this year, especially with Clemson looking like they've looked so far the last couple of weeks. And then outside of Clemson, who else is in the ACC that's worth a thing? So it might be
FSU.
FSU might have something to say about that.
We'll see about FSU.
That might be a good one this year to watch.
Didn't that used to be the battle for the Seminole War Canoe? Isn't that what that game used to be? And then I think they got rid of it, if I remember correctly. That might have been Florida.
I think that's Florida. You're thinking of Florida. Florida and FSU. Right. I think.
I don't know what the Miami FSU game is. There's a trophy of some kind, or at least it was on NCAA back in the day. Texas A&M is going to have to figure something out, because they're going to face a couple of really high-powered offenses, maybe, if they get their act together. They're going to have to worry about Tennessee's offense, which has looked kind of shaky the last couple weeks. But once they get online, they're going to be dangerous. And if Texas A&M doesn't get that secondary put back together in a hurry and teach people how to tackle – they could be looking at some pretty rough matchups going forward.
Which is bizarre when you think about it, because A&M has recruited at the highest of levels, especially on the defensive side of the ball, but yet they don't have anybody who can hold the secondary down. It goes back to coaching. You get the talent in, but then what are they doing after they are there?
Well, to be fair, Wes, their leading tackler in this game was a freshman, so... And granted, it was a linebacker. So, I mean, at least you got that to build off of. But yeah,
I guess I'm just thinking how they got burned, though. They're getting burned in the secondary. That's what's killing them. And so just kind of one fun anecdote that I don't know if you guys heard. Did you hear about Tyler Van Dyke and when he was born and his mom and that whole story?
No, you told me about that when we went and watched the game.
Yeah, I didn't know if Jesse knew, but we haven't talked about it here, of course. But so Tyler Van Dyke, his mom is a successful lawyer. And while she was pregnant with him, she was taking the bar. And and so she was like, I think they said like 3 hours into the test. She went to the bathroom. Her water broke while she was in there. She went to like the person up front and she was like, what do I do? And they're like, well, if you leave now, you have to retake the whole thing over again. And I guess it counts against you as well, right?
as an attempt. Again.
Right.
Which ain't cheap, by the way.
So she sat down and finished the test and went and had him afterwards. She passed the test, of course. So,
you're so badass.
Right?
That's cool.
Isn't that crazy?
Your mom's a badass.
For real. So I thought that was so amazing.
That's so cool.
All right. Well, let's go to the next one. Kent State at Arkansas. Arkansas winning this one 28-6. Matt got the point here. I have nothing to say about this one because they should have won. If anybody has anything, let me know. Otherwise, just going
to
head
How on. How dare Arkansas do that to Nick Saban's alma mater? How dare they? There will be a reckoning. It won't be this
honestly,
year. But
not there will be a reckoning. Big of a differential as it should be.
I was going to say, I don't think they did enough.
I was memeing. As the kids like to say, guys.
Memeing.
Work with me here.
All right. So let's move to your team, Matt. Austin Peay at Tennessee. Tennessee winning this one 30-13. Matt gets the point here. I really don't have anything to say. I watched this partially with you, Matt. But, you know, I mean, they did what they needed to do. What do you got?
I mean, yes, they did. But at the same time, that game should have been it was very frustrating. First off, let me throw some kudos at the Austin Peay Governors. Number one, I apologize for the name of your school. That's an awful name for a college. I don't know what they were thinking. The legislature in the at Tennessee needs to kind of get their act together because, goodness. Secondly, this is a team that came in and they were, to pardon the expression, they were balls to the wall. They were ready to go. The head coach for the Governors looked like he had done like three bumps of coke before he stepped onto the field. He was all over the place. He was hyped as you could get. And he was aggressive. I think there were a number of instances where they went for it on fourth down and they converted them. In fact, if you give me a second, I'll tell you exactly how many they converted. But I mean, this was a team that came ready to play and they showed up and they definitely were ready to play. They were on fourth down. Hold on. It's right here. They were 2 for 5, but still they went for it on fourth down 5 times, which says a lot. This was a team that was ready to go. Tennessee didn't look ready to go. We went into the halftime up, 13-6, and you're just like, where are we and what is happening? I think a lot of the battered balls, those of us that suffer from battered ball syndrome, were having like flashbacks back to Air Force and flashbacks back to Wyoming and flashbacks back to Georgia State a couple of years ago. Granted, we're in a different spot than we were then, but something didn't feel right. Now, luckily for us, Milton managed to get everything kind of going in the second half. Now, granted, they did not blow anybody out of the water. He's still, he had a decent day, not a great day. Jalen Wright, over 100 yards again in this particular game. He's been looking great. Jabari Small's been looking good. The run game is pretty solid, but there are so many drops. So many drops. There are a couple drops there that if they catch those, this game's probably, 48-13 or 52-13 if things run out the right way. Brew McCoy had one that hit him right in the hands, and there was nobody within like 15 yards of him. It had been a 6-point, no problem. But he just dropped it, and there were about 4 plays where that happened. So offensively, we looked really rough. Defensively, though, which is the surprise so far through these first two games, Aaron Beasley with 2 sacks on the day is just flying around. He had 9 tackles in this game. And 5 of those were tackles for losses. Tennessee, I think, is number 1 or 2 right now in the country in tackles for losses right now, which is not what we anticipated going into the beginning of the season. That's a pretty big stat for for a defense that last year was not the best on the planet. So Tennessee's defense clicking along pretty well. I mean, they're putting pressure on quarterbacks. They're managing to stop the run. I think their leading rusher only had 36 yards on the ground. So again, doing a decent job defensively. It's just, we got to get the offense clicking. And there's been a lot of people on Vol Twitter all this week. Oh, woe is us. Oh, the wheels have come off. Oh no, Florida's going to beat. Guys, relax. It's the second game. Are we disappointed we didn't beat the absolute breaks off Austin Peay? Yes. Do we have reasons to be sad and depressed and, having issues where we think it was all a pipe dream, this is it? No. Wait until we get into SEC play, and then you can hit the panic button. So just be aware. It's fine. We're good. We are okay. Nobody's bleeding. Nobody's hurt. Let's keep pressing on.
It's all fine. We're all fine here. Jesse, do you have anything to add?
I mean, for me, it was just popping into that game and looking at the score early on. I was like, what is going on? And then eventually, coming back and checking it. Everything's fine. You're fine, Tennessee. Don't cry about it. You could be dealing with another situation.
Speaking of that other situation, here we are at Texas and Alabama. Texas winning this one, 34-24. Matt gets the point here. And Jesse, I'll turn it over to you first, and then we can kind of just add on.
Wait. Yeah? Hold on.
Waiting.
2 seconds. Hold on. Second.
You have Hold Texas on. Fight Song Hold or on. Something?
No.
We're waiting with bated breath.
Okay. Go ahead, Jess.
I can't hear it.
You don't hear it?
No.
I can hear some.
Is it In the Arms of an Angel by
Sarah? It is. Okay, the joke doesn't work. Go ahead, Jesse. It was supposed to be Sarah McLachlan. It's like the puppy commercials they show on TV where all the puppies are just so sad and they play Sarah McLachlan in the background and you just feel so bad. And Jesse, I feel bad for you, but not for your school at all. Go ahead.
Well, I'm really glad that no one I respect could hear the words coming out of my mouth during Saturday night's game.
Were they all four letters? Did they start with letters like F and S?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Lots of Garfinugan.
Yeah.
It has a lot more than four letters.
I felt like I was going to throw up at many points in it and even texted several people at that point. Okay, where to begin? We'll start with the quarterback situation because I feel like that's where a lot of people are put in their camp. After week one, Jalen Milroe was obviously the kind of talk of the team after we had the victory over Middle Tennessee. And rightfully so, he had an incredible performance against a very small opponent. That progress that I think Alabama fans felt from him kind of halted on Saturday. Not to say that he hasn't made progress, but it felt as though the struggles that he experienced last year started to resurface. A lot of that calm and control that we saw in the Middle Tennessee game that we didn't see last year, I felt started to come to the forefront, and it was a little concerning. There were two bad interceptions. We honestly probably could have ended up with a few more interceptions than what we did had people been paying attention or really kept their hands on things. I don't think it was all his fault. I think people need to maybe pump the brakes a little bit on how terrible he is. I think he's an incredible athlete. And I think that a lot of the issues also come from our offensive line, which is an offensive line that is bigger than 99% of the NFL's offensive lines from weight and height. And their inability to hold the line and to actually dominate the line of scrimmage made it so that he was getting sacked. He was getting so much pressure. And in his third start this season, his third start, that's not good. He can't get banged up, but he needs time to settle. And when he's not getting protection, that's not going to help him settle. I think we saw that Coach Saban said he had considered replacing Milroe during the game, but that he ultimately decided that things probably wouldn't be any different with Tyler Buckner or Ty Simpson in the game. But I am interested to see if at any point they start to get that chance. I was seeing on Instagram a lot of accounts posting that it looked like Tyler Buckner might be the favorite going into this week. I don't know. I really don't know. And I'm not sure how to feel about it. Milroe gave me a lot of stress this past weekend, but a lot of people on the team gave me a lot of stress as well. And I think we're starting to see as Alabama fans just how incredible Bryce Young was because he is the reason that we were able to win last year. And he's the reason that we probably only had two losses last year. I don't know without Bryce Young, if we would have only been at two losses, and I don't know this year how many we'll have. So I will say that now, Bama fans, Bama faithful, it may not be over, but it doesn't mean that our program's dismantling and everything's over. We're still a wonderful program. We still have so much talent, but we have gotten so used to going from Jalen Hurts to Tua Tagovailoa to Mac Jones to Bryce Young. And we have to understand that not every quarterback is going to be those young men and have their caliber or work within our program well, or have the assets around them so that they can rise to that level. I also think that our defense just wasn't accountable. Our offensive line wasn't accountable. We preached so much in the offseason that we were going to play hard-nosed, joyless murder ball. And we have not been playing joyless murder ball, much to my dismay. We were bullied by Texas offensively and defensively. Every single time our running backs got the ball, they were snuffed, swallowed up immediately. And then we allowed Milroe to get sacked 5 times and we didn't touch their quarterback. That's not joyless murder ball. I know joyless murder ball. That's not joyless murder
ball. Joyless for someone.
Yeah, it was joyless for me. It was maybe it was joyless murder ball because I was joyless and we were getting murdered with the ball.
We need to be specific with the joyless.
Yeah, you need to clear that up a little bit.
Yeah, I was not happy. And then for a team in a program that has historically forced turnovers and scored a lot on defense, we have not been doing that. We have not put pressure on quarterbacks like we should have, and we have not forced that many turnovers. Or if there has been any sort of turnover, we're not going to capitalize on it. So for me, it was a very, very ugly look for Alabama. And we have preached so much of turning around what was last season that we better start turning around this season. And we looked very unprepared. Congratulations to Coach Sark because he called an incredible game. He outcoached us for sure. And it was easy to see their quarterback did an incredible job. He really did. And their line, both offensive and defensive line, didn't give us an inch. So honestly, Texas came in there. They did work in a very difficult place to play with over 101,000 people screaming at them at night. And they deserved to win. We did not deserve to win that ball game, and we did not.
Real quick before we go to Matt, coordinators, articles of food. What are they this week?
They're not the great buffalo chicken. I'm not going to say that they're terrible because at the end of the day, offensively, it's tough because we ran the ball so much and we were getting snuffed, but we couldn't throw the ball because we were throwing interceptions. We got to do something with it. And our offensive line wasn't helping us out. So there's only so many things you can do, so many plays you can call as a coordinator. At the end of the day, those guys on the field have to execute what you call. And if they're not executing anything, I don't know what you call. So for me, I feel like, honestly, everybody this week is just like a bowl of cereal, like a bowl of life cereal. Okay. That's it.
Cool. Yeah.
It's not great, but it's known to you. It's you know it, and you're like, okay.
It'll get you through the day.
Eat it.
No, yeah. It won't. That cereal's awful.
I don't know. And this just feels like life. This is a life lesson. We're all a bowl of cereal.
I hear you. Life lesson. I love it. Matt, your thoughts on this one?
Listen, I was not anticipating Quinn Ewers to come out and look like he did. He throws for almost 350 yards. And like Jesse said, he wasn't really touched much during that game. They were able to make a good pocket. He was able to get some things downfield. It really makes you wonder how different last year's Texas game would have been if he doesn't get knocked out in the first quarter or second quarter, whenever. I think he got knocked out relatively early. I think it was first quarter. But it does make you kind of wonder what that would have looked like. On a personal level, I am loving all the Bama woe is us thing. No offense, Jesse. It's really kind of funny to see some of the absolutely idiotic things you're seeing on social media right now, whether that's on Twitter or on the message boards. Like, people are just, they're ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So they are going through it, as the kids like to say. I thought Milroe looked very pedestrian in this game. I was not really impressed with anything he had to throw. Again, throwing two picks against a pretty top rated or a top team like Texas, you're not going to be able to get past those mistakes really very easily. And, you know, this is a great win for Texas. I'm not going to say Texas is back. I don't think any of us want to. In fact, if you watch the end of that game when they interviewed Quinn Ewers, the reporter tried to get him to say Texas is back in the soundbite. He's like, I'm not saying anything Except I'm glad we won this game. We still have work to do. We want to try to get to the playoff. Like that, they tried. They really tried to get there, and luckily he didn't take that bait. But with all that being said, I want to point out attention to this little oh, my phone turned off. Hold on. This right here. Do you see this? Can you see this?
It's not going to show up because of the glimpses.
Hold on. I'll turn this off.
See flashes. I don't know what it is yet, but I don't think
my jokes are not working tonight. Look,
there we go. Okay,
Jesse, do you know what that is?
I mean, I see it's a countdown, but
it's a countdown. Do you know what it is a countdown to?
Hopefully, a cruise for you or something.
To January, when the coaching carousel at the University of Alabama will be starting. Because here's what's going to happen. Here it is. You ready for it? He's done. He's through. He's going to retire. He's going to pack it in.
Right.
They're going to give him the gold pocket. Well, no. They're going to give him the gold pocket watch. They're going to build another statue. They're going to say, thank you for your service, Nick. And then they're going to go find the next Nick Saban. But they're not going to be able to find the next Nick Saban because there is no other Nick Saban.
Do they still do gold pocket watches?
But in all seriousness, kids, he's done.
We'll get to a little bit.
No.
A little bit more.
Miss Terry already pulled the trigger. I'm telling you, it's happened. Let's move on.
All right. Yeah, I agree. Too many mistakes for Bama. Milroe, it seemed like he was trying to fit the ball into tight windows on the two interceptions we saw. Actually, the first one was a tight window. The second one was just straight up. I don't think he saw the guy underneath. And threw it right to him, basically. I mean, because he didn't see him. So, sorry, I didn't mean to make you relive that.
Wide open triggered. Person that was on the other side of the field. And you're just like, you got to make reads.
But however,
the offensive line did nothing.
Right.
And he didn't have time.
However, there are other instances where he makes plays I don't think anybody else makes on the team. So it's kind of give and take. Obviously, those two interceptions were huge, though. To be fair, Texas looked pretty good, as you guys have already mentioned. Their defense swarming the ball, Quinn Ewers throwing really accurate passes, and Sark just calling an amazing game on the offensive side. And I do wonder how much of that had to do with him being familiar with Bama. So good news for Bama is this is an out-of-conference loss and doesn't affect their chances to represent the West. So, you know, obviously it's not all done. So, you know, still some hope there. And
by the way, there were a couple of really long bombs. Like there was that big bomb that he threw like 55 yards and hit that guy over the shoulder, like over the top of his head. It was like, wow, just a lot of deep threats, which you don't usually see out of Texas, but Sarkisian's got him rolling.
Yeah. Yep. So, more to follow. We'll watch them. And you know, I appreciate, Ewers with his mature response, trying to get that out of him saying Texas is back, and that's a good response by him. So we'll see. Next, Middle Tennessee at Mizzou winning this one 23-19. Matt and Jesse had the same score, so they both get the point. This one almost talk about flirting with disaster. This one almost was an actual disaster for Mizzou. They took a 23-10 lead in the fourth quarter, but then almost let the game get away from them. So just wild. Against Middle Tennessee. Hey,
listen, the SEC is struggling this year out of conference. It's so bad this year out of conference. Bowl season could be really, really bad.
Yeah, it could be a bad one. Jesse, do you have anything to add on that one?
It's why are you keeping him? Why?
Who are you going to go get, Jesse?
Poor Barry Odom is what I say.
Anybody.
Yeah, they should have fired Odom. They should have given Odom some more time.
Because Drinky said he was talking about his offensive line performance, and he said, I think there's a good probability there's going to be some personnel changes. Eli, I think there needs to be some coaching changes. Some personnel changes for sure. Oh,
we're going to have to circle the wagons.
I love it. I love it when Jesse uncorks the bottle on Drinky. It makes me feel validated. Thank you, Jesse.
It's just, how?
just not hitting Toughness Tuesday hard enough, it sounds like.
No, apparently we need to take Toughness Tuesday to wind it up Wednesday and thorough Thursday, because this is silly. This is just silly. At what point do you say, okay, it was funny, we tried to make it a thing for a while, but he's got to go. It's not funny anymore.
Jesse, you need to put some respect on the Missouri Tigers now. All six of the people that pull for them are going to be really upset with you.
I can't respect anyone who doesn't respect themselves. And this keeping this coach is not respecting yourself.
That's fair. And
my God.
Speaking of silliness, Grambling at LSU. LSU winning this one 72-10. I got the point here. I don't have anything to say. This was a nuke. Does anybody have anything to say before we move on? Okay.
I mean, kudos to LSU for getting a big win over an in-state rival, but yeah. Woof.
All right, next, McNeese at Florida. Florida winning this one 49-7. I got the point here. Again, you know, this is just another one of those, you know, down games. Matt, looks like you do have a note here. What you got?
I honestly don't remember what I wrote. Excuse me. Florida gets a little bit of a shot in the arm before they have to worry about Tennessee coming to knock on their door on Saturday. Is it enough to knock off UT? I don't think so. I think this is still going to be the clown show that's happening in Florida. I think it's going to continue. I think this gives them a little bit of confidence going into this weekend. Don't expect it to last.
Yeah. Next, Arizona at Mississippi State. Mississippi State winning this one in a very exciting ending, 31-24. Jesse gets the point here. Actually a lot of offense in this one, came down to the wire. Arizona scored to tie it and send them into overtime. But it was State who came up big by scoring first in overtime and then stopping Arizona just barely from getting a first down during their possession. So, if anyone caught it live, head coach Zach Arnett let the F-bomb drop in the interview afterwards. And apparently there is no delay with sensors and that type of thing when it comes to that situation. So everyone heard it. You guys have anything to say about that one?
I mean, not much here other than, you know, it was one of those where I want them to do well this season. They're still transitioning into a new era under Coach Arnett. And it seems like the focus offensively has kind of turned a little bit. Will Rogers only threw for 17 passes, which is his lowest number of passes as a starter. And, you know, it's like they were really pushing running the ball. Their running back Marks now has back-to-back 100 plus yard games. So again, just a very different program that we're going to start to see. And I think something that Bulldog fans are going to continue to see and have to get used to, same as the players on the team. It's not the team he recruited. It's some guys that were recruited for a completely different offense. So there's going to be some transition there. And then I think for Mississippi State defensively, the secondary needs to clean it up a little bit. They play a lot of zone coverage. And so it's really easy for opponents to take that and kind of dump the ball off to, you know, a receiver or a really quick running back. And they can gain a lot of yards on the secondary. So for them, those are my two kind of takeaways from that game. And hopefully before they start playing teams that are really going to launch the ball on them, they can clean up that secondary a little bit.
I mean, the offense is a night and day difference. Matt, what do you think?
We're seeing a pretty big transition down in Starkville. First off, I don't see the problem dropping the F-bomb on live TV. I mean, this is a big, big win. This is over a team from the best conference in the country right now. Because if you look at the stats right now in the Pac-12, the Pac going to be non-existent in another 6 months. This is a conference that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of their members are undefeated. Now Arizona's not one of those, but again, it's a big win. So sure, why don't you get you excited? Get you an F-bomb. Everybody's happy. Will Rogers, I think if they keep up this trend, I don't foresee him breaking. It was Aaron Murray that we were talking about last Yeah. He's got the yard record, I think it is, or something like that. Not if you're only throwing for 160 yards a game. Yeah. So
only throwing it 17 times.
And you're only throwing it 17. But yeah. So, I mean, we'll have to wait and see what happens on that score. But, you know, kudos for them for getting a win. Let's see how they do when they get an SEC play.
Yeah. All right. Furman at South Carolina. South Carolina winning this one 47-21. Matt gets the point here. This one was actually a little bit closer early on in the game, but obviously South Carolina doing what they need to do. If you guys have anything, you're okay.
570 yards of offense, though, is pretty good for Beamer Balls. So there's that.
Yeah. Maybe the mayo is not quite spoiled. Yeah, we'll see. All right. Auburn at California, at Cal. Auburn winning this one 14-10. And, you know, incredibly exciting offensive game. Neither team really getting anything going here. But Auburn finally found enough offense to get the job done. And defense did what they needed to do, holding Cal to only 10 points. You know, Auburn, this is only their fourth trip to California ever, the state of California. They were previously winless, so this is their first win in the state of California. So kudos to them for that. I know it's not a trip that they usually make. Did you guys have any thoughts on this one? It was a late one, 10:30 start time.
It was so late. And I think that Auburn was feeling that. Honestly, they had four first downs, just four, and 99 yards in the first half, and went 1 for 6 on third down. That's not great. And they began with a fumble and 3 straight punts. So it's not great. You can't have early offensive struggles. Thank God their defense was there to kind of pick them up. I may not say this name right, so I do apologize. Eugene Asante?
Sounds good to me.
It could go either way. Asante on Auburn's defense led with 12 tackles, a sack, and a pass breakup. So he got them going. Thank goodness, because this game could have been a loss for the Tigers on the road. Cal missed 3 field goals and had another one wiped away with a penalty. And Auburn just kind of secured a win with an interception with less than 2 minutes. So again, just an interesting one for a late game, and one that Auburn, for a team that now has a new coach, needs to get that offense going.
Matt, your thoughts?
Listen, if you were looking for an old school, like 1992 NCAA football game, then this is what you'd get. We used to have scores. This was common. You'd have 10-14. 9-6, like that's the way SEC football used to be, but we don't play that style of football anymore. And Auburn's going to have to get with the times. There were 7 total turnovers in this game. That is black against a Pac-12 defense. It's not a good look for Auburn fans. Now, granted, Auburn won. Auburn comes away with a road win, which is big. But man, they've got a lot of work to do before they strap it up against, you know, LSU and, you know, Alabama and Ole Miss. Like, they got some – Hugh Freeze has got a pretty big thing that he's going to take care of here. So, best of luck, kids.
Yeah, it doesn't get any easier for sure. All right, that does it for last week's games. The current pick 'em standings, Matt has 13. He's in the lead. Congrats, Matt. I got 10, and Jesse has 6. Let's go ahead and get to the speed round.
Speed round. That always gives me so much anxiety.
I know, right? You're like, I gotta go fast.
Triggering sound. Between that and the almost time to drown sound in the Sonic games, like, it's
Oh man, that was brutal.
So much.
On the labyrinth zone. Oh man, it was the worst. Yes. okay. True or false? With a Big 12 schedule remaining, Texas looks poised to make a playoff run. Matt, let's start with you on this one. What do you got?
Yes? Question mark. outside of Texas, the only other team I think you have to worry about in the Big 12 is Oklahoma. Both of those are going to be coming to the SEC very soon, by the way. Outside of that, I don't foresee anybody really getting past those two. Oklahoma has wins so far this season over, let's see, let me take a look. if my internet will cooperate. I don't know who they beat, but I don't foresee any issues with that score. Oh, that's right. Oklahoma beat Arkansas State 73-0 this past weekend, and they have a win over SMU. If they can win the Red River Shootout, then they should be okay. Will they make a playoff run? I don't see why not. If they went out from here, they'll have a couple big wins under their belt. Sure. I can see it.
Jesse?
Yeah, I think so. I'm looking at their schedule, and I think they're probably poised for that. I would say, yeah, it doesn't look like they're going to face too many crazy opponents. The only team I would say that might also give them some trouble is maybe Texas Tech. But I think we may see Texas in a playoff.
Yeah, Kansas State, maybe. I think they're number 15 in the AP right now. So we'll see.
West.
I don't know. But if I had to say, based on what I saw Saturday, I don't really see them, you know, dropping one to any of these other teams. You know, granted, things can change, but if I'm going just on that sampling of information. Okay, let's see. Next, should Ole Miss's offense be concerned? They really struggled down the stretch against Tulane's defense, and Quinshon Judkins, possibly the best running back in the country, was held to 48 yards on 18 carries. We discussed this a little bit, but Jesse, what do you think? Should their offense be concerned?
I don't know that they should be concerned quite yet. I think they just have to start off a little stronger, but we've said that about a lot of teams in the SEC this week and last week. And I think that they just have to find maybe a better way to utilize him. Maybe it's some kind of short passes instead of just handing him off the ball, or maybe the line needs to do a better job. But it's hard to say at this point. We're a little early. I wouldn't be concerned. And they've got a coach in Lane Kiffin who is an offensive mastermind. So I'm sure he'll come up with something.
Matt?
Yeah, I think we've got a legitimate concern here. I mean, if you look at the stat line for these first two games, and just like Jesse said, take this with a grain of salt. It's early in the season. It's Lane Kiffin's offense. They'll probably work it out. But through two games, Quinshon Judkins only has 108 yards total in both of those games. That's not something you really want to hang your hat on. Jackson Dart, by comparison, has 77 yards of total offense, of rushing yards to his name. So he's right behind him. He has actually a better average than the RB1 does. So yeah, that's a bit concerning. Now, granted, Jackson's looked pretty good in the air. He's completed 70% of his taxes, 70% of his passes. he's thrown for over 600 yards in those two games. So, I mean, he's not having a bad time of it, but they've got to do something about that run game. They've got to get Quinshon Judkins the ball in space. The O-line's got to do a better job of controlling the line of scrimmage. They're going to have to figure something out.
Yeah.
SEC, where the hell is the O-line?
Right. To quote you, Matt, I would be a little concernicus. It is concerning to see them struggle so much on offense when you throw in an offensive mind like Lane Kiffin, best running back probably in the country, and Jackson Dart, who's looked like a quality quarterback. These struggles the first 2 weeks, I would be concerned if I'm a fan. Like you said, I mean, I understand what they've got going, the offensive mind of Lane Kiffin, that they will probably get things going at some point. But to this point in the season, it is a little concerning. So, all right. Then the final question that I have here is just kind of a fun one, a weird one. Is Nick Saban okay? Right. There's been a series of decisions that are just out of character for Saban, to me anyway. Like he's agreed to be on Pat McAfee's show every Thursday. Pat McAfee, just an absolute nut. So he may be, Saban may be really glad, just a fun life experience, or he may just regret this decision absolutely when he gets around all those crazies around McAfee and his bros on the show. And then after a loss to Texas at home, he had this to say.
But I do think that there was a great atmosphere out there. You know, our fans did a tremendous job. We appreciate the support. It was fantastic. And, it's a privilege to play in games like this. It's a privilege to play at the University of Alabama. It's a privilege to play where you have such great tradition, and it's a privilege to play where you have such great fan support. So we really appreciate it. Thank you.
So I get it. Like what he said is like a good thing to say, right? And you should say it. It's good, but it's like, it's not normally what you would hear from Saban after a loss. He would ordinarily be really ticked. He would be short with the reporters and you know, just talk about things that need to be addressed. And maybe he did that and I just missed it, but it was just, it just seemed like an odd thing. It's just this feel good answer from a dude who in historically has been just angry about stuff like this. I don't know. What do y'all think? Jesse, we'll start with you.
To me, I think this is almost scarier. You know, when you know someone is like a ticking time bomb, I think it's almost like more terrifying when they're calm, because you're like, wait, I know how to handle you when you're mad. Why are you? Why? What is this? But I think the use of the word privilege is very interesting. And maybe this is my like conspiratorial mind going way too deep into this, but I think word choice is important. It is a privilege to play in a game like that. It is a privilege to play on that team. And it is a privilege to have that fan support. To me, that almost sounds like a threat to those guys. Like, this is a privilege to get to start in this game. Step up, or your privileges are revoked. I see it a little bit like that. I also know that I think thoughts around the program are, there's so much hate coming from programs that aren't playing in games like this, that won't play teams like this. So I don't know. To me, I'm not as concerned. I was surprised he decided to go on McAfee's show, but I really enjoyed watching it. I think you get some really interesting anecdotes and get to see him a little bit more as a person rather than a coach. So I'm excited to watch. I also think Pat McAfee is hilarious.
Matt, this is your moment.
Jesse, you're part of the problem with this country. Because Pat McAfee is a horse's ass. There, I said what I said. Guys, let's be real. Listen to what the man said. It is a privilege to play in games like this. It's a privilege to play at the University of Alabama. It's a privilege. It's a privilege. It's a privilege. This is the sound of a man who is sitting on the front porch in slippers watching the sunset because he's done. He's through. Miss Terry has pulled the string and she said, Nick, we're finished. You need to spend some time with your kids. You need to spend some time with me. You need to enjoy your retirement before you drop dead on the end zone like Bear Bryant almost did in the 80s. It's time to pack it in. The man is done. They're announcing it in January. Jesse, I'm sorry for you. I hate it for you. But get ready. The carousel's cranking up in January. It's done. Look at the man. Look at the way he's responded to his team getting beaten by Texas, who they would have beaten, who they should have beaten, if they had played a better game. And the man's just like, it's a privilege. I'm really glad to be here. That is the sound of a man who's close to retirement. That is the sound of a man who is in the process in the back of his mind going, I just have to get through 8 more games. I just have to get through 8 more games. I just have to get through 8 more games. All I got to do is keep this together until we get to the end of this thing. And then I could turn this over to Dabo Swinney and call it a day.
1,000% no.
Well, okay, fine.
I was fine. Impressive until Listen, you said that.
If you're not a Bama fan, you might actually want Dabo to go there.
Look, yeah. If you don't want Dabo, that's fine. But look at who you're going to have to go after. The cupboard's kind of bare, Jesse. It's kind
Do you
want to
know what rumor? Do you want to know what rumor I heard?
If you say Deion, I'm going to puke right now.
Yep.
That's the rumor I heard. I heard Deion, which
they're already talking about it. Let's make it happen.
I'm not about it. I think Deion, once he gets his sons to the professional level, he will go to the professional level to coach there. Mm-hmm. I think so much of what he's done is for his sons. And I don't think that he's committed to college athletics. I think he's committed to hype and where the money is, and he's going to go pro. However,
that's such a nihilistic viewpoint, Jesse. That's prime time you're talking about there. He's got his
loan on the sidelines. Come on.
The man calls himself prime time.
He calls himself prime. I think, and I don't know this, I don't think anymore. I used to. I don't think anymore Dabo Swinney will go to Alabama because I don't think Alabama wants him. He does not do the transfer portal. He does not agree with NIL. That is not how our system has been set up. And to us, winning means more than anything. So like you can take your, all of your religion and all of your like NIL againstness and we don't want it. We want to win. So figure that out. I don't think we'll take him. I think we would take Lane Kiffin and I think I'd be okay with it. I said what I said. Oh
God, please don't put that voodoo on us. Please don't.
Yeah.
Put
so I think I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, but probably more towards Matt than the other side. Well, I mean, so the thing is I didn't really used to be a conspiracy person about this and I'm still not really, but some of the things that he said and some of the decisions that he has made just make me reconsider and just kind of think it does kind of sound like a guy who has had a chance to sit back, see kind of what, you know, the good things in life are and is reconsidering what his priorities are and is like, you know what, maybe there's more to this than football.
He'll be 72
next month. Hold on, Wes. Let's not get crazy now.
I know, right? It's completely ridiculous. It's probably not true.
I think you're giving him way more credit than he deserves. I think Terry's already told him, look, we bought that nice house down in Florida. We're going to go live there, and you're going to take care of things for a while. I'll have your little Debbie snack cakes. I'll make sure that you can watch football when you want to. He's going to get into the broadcasting thing. I guarantee it.
Sure.
Because the man's good at it. So don't think you've seen the last of Nick Saban in college football, but he's done coaching at Bama after this season.
Right. Yeah. And
if he is, that is okay. He is going to be 72 this year. And I think anybody that thinks he was going to die on the field is silly. As much as we wish we could clone him and have him forever.
It is possible.
It is maybe
possible. Advances in modern science.
But if whenever he leaves, he will leave. He will retire. Whenever he does, we are hashtag so blessed for as long as we have. And I will never be mad for him choosing to actually enjoy the last 20 years of his life or whatever it may be. So
right,
it is what it is.
Well, and as for the Pat McAfee debate, I used to think he was funny. He was just, you know, this goofy punter dude who had funny stuff to say. And now I feel like he's just like taken the gag and just gone all the way to one side as far as possible with it. And it's just obnoxious now. And, you know, I do laugh occasionally, but overall I'm kind of like he and the guys on this show are just like the frat dudes who never grew up. And it's just. The same gag over and over again. Anyway,
they had a kid call in the other day. It was like an 8-year-old kid, and they're like listening to him talk, and then at the very end the kid goes F Boston, and you would have thought that the world had ended with how funny they thought there was. That's part of the problem, people. That's the reason why society is like it is, because y'all think that crap's funny. It's not funny. And while we're on the subject, somebody find him a sports jacket, for God's sake. The man owns no shirt with the sleeves. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah.
He's like every frat bro that I've ever run into, and I can't stand it.
I mean, as someone who loves Bill Belichick, I don't care.
I mean, I get that.
Get him a hoodie.
Like,
get him a hoodie. I
mean, Kirk Herbstreit's there in a daggum sweat, and he's all duded up. So is David Pollock before they cut him loose. Like Lee Corso's practically got an oxygen bottle on him. He's still out there in a suit.
They have got to stop bringing him out. It's honestly just sad at this point, and it hurts.
He looked fine on Saturday.
No,
he did not. I tell you what, Lee lays it down at the end of the season. Nick takes his spot next year on game day.
Yeah.
I've already booked it.
McAfee is definitely going to be the new Corso whenever Corso does decide, because they want somebody with that funny personality to do. And I have the feeling that's why he's been on the show to begin with, is to kind of be there for when Corso decides to retire or whatever, that he'll step in. I just have the feeling that's what's going to happen on game day.
I won't be watching game day anymore after that.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into our listener feedback.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
All right, these are mostly pointed in the same direction. First, Jamie says, Milroe is a great athlete, but he's not the QB Bama needs right now. The O-line is weak and undisciplined. Bama got outplayed on all sides of the ball.
Yep.
Similarly, Vernell says, Milroe is not good enough to lead Bama to the CFP. Gerald R. says, Bama looking so bad. Nicholas M. says, we are losing our edge. I'm not sure if he means we as in Bama or the collective we as the SEC. I don't know. And then
he's right on both counts.
And then Johnny, we appreciate you being on the show last week, but he said, I have no capability whatsoever ever of making predictions of college football. That's what was his takeaway from this past week. So, but we do appreciate you. I don't know. I know Milroe has undergone a lot of criticism, but gosh, I just don't know how fair it is. And again, I don't know how well these other quarterbacks would do in the same situation.
Exactly.
I don't know. Did you guys have anything when you saw those comments there, did you have anything that just kind of popped into your head in response to any of that?
I agree with all of them. I mean, they're not wrong. Milroe has not looked great. I mean, he is a good athlete, but I mean, he's shown that he is, and I said it before, a pedestrian. Like, there's nothing exceptional about him. When you look at the last couple of quarterbacks that Bama's had, Bryce Young, Tua Tagovailoa, when you get into all those other ones that they've had, they've been very elite quarterbacks. There's a reason why when they go to the NFL, they make a name for themselves. I don't think Jalen Milroe's going to have that same success. I could be wrong.
Okay. All right. Well, we do have some good ones coming up. Let's talk about the games this upcoming weekend and make our predictions.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
All right, first of all is number 14 LSU, 1-1, 0-0 in the SEC at Mississippi State, 2-0, 0-0 in the SEC, noon on ESPN. Matt, what is your prediction for this game?
Guys, this is going to be a tough one, I think. I think Mississippi State's going to have enough weapons. LSU has shown that they can be beat. So I think this is going to be LSU barely squeaking this one out, 28-27.
Okay. Yeah, I think this one might involve a little bit less scoring than some of the experts are thinking. I'm going to go LSU 28-17. Jesse?
I'm going to agree with everything Matt said, and I would have chosen LSU had it been in the swamp, but I'm going to just fingers cross it for Mississippi State and hope that they can get it done in Starkville. So I'm going to pick them, same score, 28-27, but I'm going Bulldogs.
Okay. All right. Number 15, Kansas State at 2-0 at Mizzou, 2-0 noon on SEC Network. Matt, your prediction for that one?
Yeah, Drinky's not going to be able to get things done here. Kansas State 35-18.
Okay. Yeah, I'm also going Kansas State 27-21. Jesse?
Drinky, just bring the boxes for the office after the game.
K-State. Hold on. He's got to get a conference loss first before he start talking about firing him.
This is just bad. K-State's taking this one, 31-21.
All right. Next, South Carolina, 1-1, 0-0 in the SEC at number one, Georgia, 2-0, 0-0 in the SEC, 3:30 on CBS. Matt, what is your prediction?
Sorry, I was looking at one of the other ones. Which one are we on?
You're good. South Carolina at Georgia.
Ah, yes. Beamer ball against Georgia at Georgia. Don't expect this to go well. So UGA 33-10.
Okay. Yeah, I think we see Beck tested for perhaps first time in a real game scenario. Probably a few kinks to work out there because of that. I'm going to say the defense puts the offense in good position. And the depth of Georgia wins the day. I'm going Georgia 42-7. Jesse?
Keeping on the Bulldogs train here, but I agree. I think Georgia probably starts out a little slow again and Carolina tries to take advantage of that. But the Carolina that we saw in the North Carolina game, they got tired real fast. So I think when Georgia starts slow and South Carolina starts fast, it kind of swaps in the second half. UGA will take this one 31-17.
All right. Next, number 10, Alabama, 1-1 at South Florida, also 1-1, 3:30 on ABC. Matt, what you got for Bama, South Florida?
Here you go, Jesse. You're going to get the return of Saban-esque football. So angry Bama smash. This is going to be Bama winning this thing 42-13.
Yeah, I agree. Bama is going to feel better after this one. Bama 45-14. Jesse?
Bring in the joyless murder ball, but for the other team this time. We got it mixed up last time. Bama's going to take this one easily, 42-10.
All right. Next is the UL Monroe Warhawks. Their mascot is Ace, the Warhawk. By the way, I have some fun info for some of these teams this week. They are 2-0 at Texas A&M, 1-1, 4 o'clock on SEC Network. Matt, what's your prediction there?
Yeah, I think this is a bounce back game for Texas A&M. They've got a directional, well, not a directional school, but anytime you have to tell you what city the school's in, that's usually a sign they're not very good. Plus, the UL teams are always kind of floating around picking up losses to SEC teams. So, yeah, Texas A&M's going to roll here 42-20.
Okay. Yeah, I got A&M in this one also, 45-10. Jesse?
Isn't UL Monroe where Terry Bradshaw went?
Yes.
I think so. Yes. I was going to say it was one of those smaller ones down there.
Yeah. Him and the dad from...
Oh, yeah.
Phil, right? Phil Robertson.
Yeah, Phil.
I'm going to pick the Aggies in this one as well, but I don't know that it's going to be as big of a differential as y'all have chosen. So I'm going to pick them taking it 28-21.
I like that pick. That's a good pick.
Okay.
I don't agree with it, but that's a good pick.
All right. Next is number 11, Tennessee, 2-0, 0-0 in the SEC at Florida, 1-1, 0-0 in the SEC. 7 o'clock on ESPN. Matt, give it to us. What you got?
I'm going to go last. You'll go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So Tennessee's only favored by 6.5 in this one, at least currently as we record. Florida looked bad against Utah and dominated McNeese, but I mean, what does that really tell you, right? Conventional wisdom says trust the bookies, but I got to go with my gut here. I'm going to go and I'll say the Vols win this one 35-24. Yeah. And you better believe those Vol receivers are looking at the Florida secondary and licking their chops. So I think we're going to see a little bit better of what people are expecting from the Vols here. I don't know, Jesse, what you got?
I agree. I think the Vols take care of this one. However, it's similar to what I said about Georgia. I think the slow start might happen in this one, and Florida is going to try to take advantage of it. They are in the swamp. It is a night game. That's a tough place to be. But at the end of the day, I think UT gets rolling, and they take care of it 35-21.
Okay. Now, Matt, what do you have?
This is Tennessee's opportunity to break a streak that goes all the way back to 2003. Tennessee has not beaten Florida in the swamp since 2003, which, by the way, I was at that game. I was there. I was in the band then. So this should again, look at the gray hair. All right. It's been a hot minute. So with that in mind, the players had a players only meeting after the win against Austin Peay this past weekend. I think the guys realize that this is where things are going to have to actually crank up. I think there's going to be a lot more focus going into preparations for this week. Plus, it's Florida. If you can't get up for the Florida game, what can you get up for? So, yeah, I think Tennessee's going to end up winning this thing, and I think it's going to be close through probably two quarters, and then they're going to start to pull away in the second half. I say Tennessee wins this thing 38-20.
Okay. All right. Next is Sam.
And by the way, if Florida does find a way to win this thing, I will be inconsolable, and I will not be in contact via phone, email, or anything else because I will be at home in a corner crying.
I get that.
All right. Noted. next is Samford 1-1. The Bulldogs, by the way, mascot, Spike the Bulldog, a costumed bulldog who was introduced in 2017 after they retired another costumed bulldog named Sam. So nice. Now you know. At Auburn, 2-0, 7 o'clock on ESPN Plus. Matt, what you got here?
Auburn's not going to have any issues with this. I think a Samford gets a late touchdown in the fourth quarter when the second and third string in. So I'm going to say Auburn wins 28-10.
Okay. Yeah, I think Auburn gets things figured out here. And I mean, it's Samford. Not that, you know, not trying to, you know, dog them too much. But I'm just saying, I think they should be able to handle them. I'm going Auburn 56-7. Jesse?
I think the Tigers take care of it, but I think it's closer in the first half than they would like. I think Auburn is, again, it's the same thing across the SEC. Everyone's just slow getting started, but Auburn takes care of this one, 28-12.
Okay. All right. Next is Vanderbilt, 2-1 at UNLV, 1-1. Now, look, let's do a mascot deep dive real quick for UNLV. Ooh. Okay. They are the Rebels and have gone mascotless since 2020. Their original mascot was a Confederate uniform wearing wolf named Beauregard. That was abolished in the 70s for obvious reasons. Plus the fact that it really didn't have anything to do with the community's history, right? We're UNLV, right? So they voted to abolish the mascot, but keep the Rebels' name. Next was a musket-toting Minuteman from the Revolutionary War, but that failed to resonate in the West as well. They were without an official mascot until 1983 when Hey Reb was introduced, which you can look up, kind of a cartoonish caricature of an old man with a handlebar mustache, which for some, again, seemed to lean towards a Confederate soldier. After protests in 2020, this too was dropped, and they currently do not have plans to create a new mascot and will remain mascotless, similar to the New York Giants. So. Yeah, you know the picture that you're talking about the dude who what is it, Sonny in Philadelphia, where he's got the string all over the board. It's difficult to follow and really doesn't make a whole lot of
dumb
sense.
Dumb as hell. I'm sorry. What?
You know what I think happened? I think when they in the very beginning when they were trying to come up with a name, they were like, you know what sounds great is the Rebels, and they just didn't even think anything about it. They just thought it sounded cool, and then they're like, oh wait. We need to make a mascot. And so then they did all that stuff and didn't work out so well. Yeah.
Why don't they just be like the Elvises or whatever? They're in Vegas. There's so many things in Vegas that they could do.
Right.
Oh, God.
They could be the casinos.
The casinos.
Slot machines.
The gangsters.
Yeah.
The desert cacti.
There's so much to choose from.
The Red Rocks. I don't know.
Yeah, lizards.
Yeah.
UNLV lizards. Yeah, that sounds good. It's that alliteration in there.
And you could have, think about all this trouble they've gone to over the years. And if they would have just changed the name to begin with, they could have had a cool mascot all this time. You know, there's so many things that could have been going on. But anyway, they don't have one right now and are apparently still the Rebels.
Honestly, with the dumb decisions that have been made, they don't deserve one. That's stupid.
Right. Wow. Dang, Jesse.
If you would like to tune into this one at 7 o'clock on CBSSN, Matt, what is your prediction for Vandy at UNLV?
I just looked up UNLV's record to see how they've done so far this season. They won their very first game against Montana State, and then they got drummed in the big house by Michigan. So this is not a team that's going to be able to hang. I am going to say it's a little closer than they played Michigan, which they lost 35-7, I think it was. So I'm going to pick Vandy here, but not by much. So 28-24 Vanderbilt. Excuse me, Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, Vandy has had their own struggles. And I think UNLV is going to make it a little bit closer than we might think. Although my score is not quite as close as yours. I'm going Vandy 31-28. Jesse? Actually, it's never mind. I can't do math.
That's okay. There are ways. Yeah. I'm going to pick Vandy in this one as well. But again, I think it is going to be a little bit closer than maybe anyone would like going into Vegas, a little bit of a time difference and probably just culturally overwhelming, different than the Vanderbilt campus. So I'm going to go with Vandy 23-14.
All right. Next, Georgia Tech at 1-1 at number 17, Ole Miss 2-0, 7:30 on SEC Network. Matt, your prediction for this one?
Well, first off, I want to point out this is an old school SEC rivalry because Georgia Tech originally was a founding member of the SEC, just like Ole Miss.
They're
is
in
just
our fight
doing
song.
Ole Miss is doing the tour. They are?
They are.
Really?
We say go teach the Bulldogs to behave, send the yellow to the water. Be great.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This has been a history lesson with pigskins and pageantry.
Yeah. Who knew that? So yeah, I think Ole Miss is not going to have any trouble with this. Georgia Tech has struggled as of late. You know, they're coming off, I think they're in their second year with this particular head coach.
Yeah.
They've been kind of wandering the wastes. It's been a long time since 1991. So yeah, Georgia Tech's not going to be able to hang here. I'm going to say they lose 38-10. So Ole Miss wins this one.
As you said, Matt, this will be Brent Keyes, Georgia Tech's head coach, his first full season with the team. I think he came in about halfway through last year. I think there's not enough consistency there yet to go up against a team like Ole Miss. I'm going Ole Miss 42-24. Jesse?
Again, it's just the slow starts for me, and I want to make sure, you know, that there are no concerns on Ole Miss's side on their offense, but I don't know that you get it figured out in one game. So I am going to pick Ole Miss in this one, but I think Georgia Tech might get a couple scores in, so I'm going 31-14.
All right.
Are we taking the over under on Dart number of throws? I'm going to say 16.
I'm going to say 17.
17.
Dart. Yeah. 19.
19. Ooh.
Yeah.
A little side bet. I like it. Yeah. You better write that down, Wes. I want to see who's right.
I know, right? It's all recorded. We have it here. So, all right. BYU at 2-0 at Arkansas, also 2-0, 7:30 on ESPN2. Matt, what's your prediction for this one?
Listen, I went and looked at BYU's schedule. Okay. And the Fighting Mormons, AKA Brigham Young University, have played Sam Houston and Southern Utah. And that's it. So, yeah, this is not going to be a good day for them. So I'm going to say Arkansas wins this thing 28-3.
Yeah, I am kind of conflicted with this one. I think that it's probably going to be a little bit more defensive minded game. I'm going to go with Arkansas here. Let's see. I'm going to go 24-17, Arkansas. Jesse, what do you got?
I agree. I went back and forth on this one, just knowing that BYU has been able to do some things coming out of last season. So I'm going to pick the Razorbacks in this one. I think BYU does score a couple times, but I'm going Arkansas 28-14.
All right. Okay. And then the final game of the weekend is Akron at 1-1 at Kentucky, 2-0. Akron are the Zips. Their mascot is Zippy the Kangaroo since 1953. Look him up. Here's the nickname deep dive, okay, for the Zips. In 1927, a campus-wide contest was held to choose a nickname. Student Margaret Hamlin suggested Zippers, which was also the name of a popular rubber overshoe sold by Akron's B.F. Goodrich Company. So apparently that won. In 1950, the then athletic director Kenneth Red Cochrane shortened the nickname to the Zips. Yep. So there you go. That is the story of the Zips.
Ohio thing I've ever heard.
I know. I love it.
Remember correctly, too, their home stadium used to be called the Rubber Bowl, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
And I think they abandoned it maybe 15 years ago, and they built a new stadium. And you can actually go to the Rubber Bowl, and it's in the process of falling apart. It looks awful now. But, yeah, I seem to remember reading something about that a couple of years ago.
It's all that dry rot in the rubber. The fun fact, my uncle actually used to work for B.F. Goodrich in Ohio. So there you go. That is 7:30 on ESPNU. Matt, what is your prediction for Akron at Kentucky?
Listen, Akron's going to have some trouble bouncing back. So yeah, Akron's not gonna, y'all did not appreciate that joke. That's it. I quit. So yeah, Akron's not gonna have any. It's gonna be Kentucky 30-13.
There you go. I did put a old school picture on there of the 1894 Akron team that defeated Ohio State 12-6. If you see it on the notes there. There you go.
Love it.
So I'm going to go with Kentucky here, and I'm going 38-10. Jesse?
I don't think this is going to be a big deal. And I think that UK finally scores a little bit more and makes us feel like they are doing something. So I'm going to go with Kentucky 30-13.
Okay. All right. Well, that does it for next week's matchups. Real quick, let's do it just for fun, because I thought in the spirit of Pat McAfee recently announcing that Coach Nick Saban will be making appearances on the show every Thursday, You know what? So in this spirit, what would be the funniest interview in terms of coach and interviewer, right? Like what duo do you think would be just absolutely hilarious? I'll go first because this one popped into my head immediately. And that was Caleb Pressly. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. I would love to see him interview Nick Saban because he's just absolutely ridiculous. The questions are absolutely, you know, the Sunday conversation where he's got the guy in the background eating the giant bowl of ice cream or whatever. I would love to see that. That would, and usually you think of Saban as a kind of a no-nonsense kind of guy in interviews, and they would just entertain me to no end. So, Matt, what do you got?
Okay, I've got a couple for you. All right, first off, I want to bring back Lou Holtz and Mark May, okay? When we had those two together, everything was right in the world. And
that was terrible. No,
it was not. Lou Holtz is a sweet old man who never did anything wrong to anybody. Mark May is a horse's patoot, but Lou Holtz was great, and I really enjoyed watching them when they used to do, what was it, College Game Day Final or something like that back in the day. I always liked it. Another matchup that I think would be a lot of fun would be finding Gary Danielson the time to fit into his busy schedule now that he's on ABC and I don't have to listen to his idiot self every Saturday. Him and Will Muschamp, I think that would be a fun interview. I would be taking bets on how long it would take Will Muschamp to give him the crazy kill eyes because you know those are going to get broken out. And then if we could bring back Mike Leach, I would love for Mike Leach to sit down between two ferns with Zach Galifianakis.
I literally had that.
That would be so good.
This is just making my day just thinking about that.
It would be so great. God, I'd love it so much. Sorry I stole yours, Jesse.
That's okay. It just means that it would have been beloved. It really would have been. I also think outside of the between two ferns, which would have been lovely. I may be the only person that actually finds this funny, but I think it would be really interesting to have Barbara Walters do some investigative interviewing with Hugh Freeze. I personally enjoy watching that. It would make me very, very happy.
Barbara asking some very pointed questions. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes.
Jesse, you should know that if you go lifting rocks, you're going to find a snake eventually.
I know. How fun, though. But I will say, if you need something to lift your spirits, since Mike Leach is no longer with us and it truly is heart-wrenching, there is a coach that is still coaching and is little known, but I would encourage all to look up some of his interviews. He coaches at Montana Tech, and Montana Tech are the ore diggers, and he is hilarious. His name is Bob Green, and he is a gem in a very similar way that Mike Leach was. So I highly encourage those that miss Coach Leach to give him a listen, because he's precious as well.
I co-sign that, because that dude is funny. He is exceptionally funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's pretty hilarious.
Looks like he runs like a lawn care business, like in the off season.
It's sort of in that vein of like maybe a lesser known coach who's just hilarious. You remember the guy from the, was it Eastern Carolina or Coastal Carolina? The Chanticleers, remember?
Carolina.
Yeah, he had the we need more dogs. We got enough cats around here. We need more dogs. That guy was hilarious. All right, well, those are all great answers. I love the Just for Fun segment, but we appreciate everyone listening to us. If you would like to contact us, please, if you'd like to email us, do so at pigskinsandpageantry@gmail.com. We can be found at Pigskins and Pageantry at TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. All three of those the same handle. X, we are at PPSEC Podcasts.
Twitter.
I know, right? It still sounds weird to say. Don't forget, we're available for download on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, TuneIn Radio, and most podcasting apps for iPhone, Android, and other operating systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment, subscribe, and review. We'd love 5 stars, and we'd greatly appreciate that. But we're kind of getting into the thick of the schedules a little bit, not completely, but we're getting there. Until next time, this is Wes. Go Dawgs.
Bring back Joyless Murder Ball, for the love of God. Roll Tide.
Ah, beat Florida. Go Vols.